Welcome to the Male Fertility Podcast, a podcast designed to help, support and educate men as they go through their own fertility struggles. I'm Kieran.
And I'm Sean. And we'll do that by sharing our stories of what we went through, as well as having guests share their knowledge and experience. Right, let's get into today's episode.
Sean, welcome to the Male Fertility Podcast. It's a pleasure to have you, buddy.
Yeah, thanks, Kieran. And hi, Sean.
Hello, mate. Two Seans here. I'm sure we'll get through it without too much complication.
Yeah,
well, one of us that spells our name right, one wrong. Who that is, everyone else can be the judge.
We'll let the audience decide that.
I am trying to figure out how I'm going to direct questions or talk to each of you, because you're both called Sean. I might just say Big Sean for you, Sean, the co-host of this podcast. Because if you meet Sean in real life, he's a lot bigger than you expect.
Mate, I've actually been known as that most of my life because my stepbrother's also called Sean and he also spells his name differently with W. So my whole life, it's been Big Sean and Little Sean.
That's right. It's Big Sean then. Big Sean for tonight, mate.
Right.
But anyway, Sean, it was great. It's great to have you here and we're really looking forward to this conversation. Now, the aim of this series is to give people like yourself to voice your stories so other guys out there that are listening. Now, it's not just me and Sean or Big Sean talking about our experiences. Other people are living this, have experienced this. So thank you so much for coming on, mate.
Yeah, it's a real privilege to be part of it. You know, I've been listening to you guys for probably the entirety of my story so far, realistically, and we'll get into that, but it started about a year ago or maybe like 14 months ago for us. And so you've been with me really throughout the whole thing. And so to be part of it, it's a bit surreal. It's a little bit like fertility. It's all a bit surreal at the moment. Really, really appreciate it. And thanks for having me.
Oh, mate, the pleasure really is ours.
It's our pleasure to have you on. And I just want to say how incredibly brave you are, because you are in it. You're still very much going through it. So that is quite incredible. And Kieran and I can both speak from our experiences that we weren't in that space. We wouldn't have been able to do it. Like, we did it and are doing it retrospectively. So absolute hats off to you, mate, for doing it whilst you're still living in it every day in the trenches.
Yeah, cheers, mate. I think that's why I reached out, really, because a lot of men are probably in the same position as me. And I think if you're listening, a big shout out to everyone that's either been through it or that's going through it, because, yeah, I've got a story, but so is a lot of people out there. And I think it's getting to the point where people are feeling more comfortable talking about it. And yeah, we are going through it. And so I don't really know how I'm going to feel talking about everything. I think that's just the raw emotions of it are probably going to come out. And, you know, things are going to be a struggle to talk about. But I think it's strange, really, because I actually quite like talking about it, because it helps me to offload exactly what's going on. And I think it really, really helps when you get to vocalize a lot of the things that you internalize.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so true. And I wish I could have listened to some when I was going through it, even if I wasn't ready to talk about it. If I'd been able to listen to someone like yourself who was going through it at that moment, with me, as if you were going up through it with me, you know what I mean? It would have really helped. So this is going to be so beneficial for so many men. So let's get in right to the beginning, I guess, and explain to us what life was like pre-fertility and that build up to, you know, getting diagnosis and your fertility journey, even though we hate the word journey, but for now we're sticking with it. So just explain to us the situation.
Yeah, as a keen listener, I will try my very best not to use that word too many times. I think it's a good part of the comedy that you two bring to it, and I think that really lightens things up. And I think it's really appreciated by your listeners, including me. So, The journey started really not that long ago in the main scheme of things. You know, I'm 35 years old now. And I've often said to people that I've been conversing about it with, for 34 years of my life, this didn't exist, which is just a crazy, crazy thing to think, because that's an awful long time, really. It's not like I'm old, but in the fertility world, I'm older than some patients would like to be if they found out they had infertility or fertility challenges, I should say. And so, as Sean said, it's still pretty much the day-to-day of our lives. And it all started July 2023 for me. So, feels like a little over a year, but we're getting to that point now where we're in autumn and 13, 14 months ago? Well, probably, no, a bit more than that, isn't it? 15, 16 months ago. But realistically, psychologically, it started a lot earlier than that. Like a lot of couples, we have lived in the same house now for 5 years. We're lucky enough to own a place together. And if you spoke to my partner, Bronte, who I'll mention an awful lot throughout, I think, we've been actively not trying. I don't know how to word it, really. We've never not wanted to conceive naturally. You know, it's never been something that we've tried to plan or think we need to get to a certain point in our lives together before we really start trying to make a family. But we always just put the fact that Bronte never fell pregnant down to the fact that we both led busy lives like a lot of people. Perhaps it was just unlucky. Perhaps it was stress. You know, and we just kept trying for months and months and months. You know, every month would roll on, and like a lot of couples out there that are listening, it was just, you know, the result never came. And we just put it down to, oh, there must be time, you know, I don't know. Like, it's really hard to explain exactly what wasn't happening for us. So naturally, Bronte went to her GP and she told them, you know, we've been trying for a baby now for best part of 3 years or so. You know, realistically, it's probably been a lot longer than that, but there's something not right because I'm not falling pregnant. And I think overall it took about a year for her to get a referral for a fertility appointment through the GP. Which that's just the reality of the NHS. So in that time, we kept trying. And then it was advised that perhaps I should also get looked at. So I went to have an appointment at my GP practice in July 2023. Had the same conversation you probably had with your GP and a lot of men out there have had, the really basic questions of intercourse and what are you doing and could it be something really simple and obvious that you're not doing right? And all those really basic questions that you think, am I really answering this? You know, am I really having this conversation? And then he said, well, the best thing you need to do is have a semen analysis done. And my first semen analysis was in July. So actually, no, it might have been August 2023. So very early on in August 2023, and I did it at home because, as you mentioned in previous episodes, that embarrassment of doing it at the hospital just was a bit overwhelming. So I decided to do it at home, take it in. I think Bronte was driving. Well, I drove and Bronte kept it warm for me in the passenger seat. Took it to the andrology department at the local hospital and waited then about 2 weeks, I think. They actually told me that I'd get the results within about 5 working days or so. You know, I almost felt like I'd get it in the same working week. So I was anxious after the first week and I hadn't heard anything. So I started chasing up the results. And you'll never believe what happened next. I got a phone call about 13 or 14 days later at 6 p.m. on a Wednesday. And I think I was driving somewhere, came through on my phone, through loudspeaker on my car, and it was an out-of-hours locum who was giving test results out for whatever reason on that day. So it wasn't even someone from my practice that had phoned me. And he actually told me over the phone that the results didn't look quite as normal as they'd hoped they would. They were abnormal, and that my sperm motility was low, and that I'd need to do a retest in 3 months' time. And so I was shocked, obviously, but kind of I was expecting something to be wrong because Bronte hadn't presented any issues, and her GP had obviously thought, well, from every test that they'd done, we need to probably look at the male side as well, just to rule things out. And it was going to be one of us, we thought. And it ended up being me. So I called Bronte straight away. I said, the test results are abnormal. Something about the sperm motility not being the right, you know, volume or something. And at this point, you've got to imagine that I'm completely new into this world and I don't even know what he's talking about and I don't even know who he is. So this is just a really crazy 5 minute phone call and then it's all over. And I'm just thinking, right, I've got to book in for another semen analysis. And then something was just bugging me and I thought, we need to get the test results, a hard copy of the test results. So we called up and asked the practice if they'd share with us the hard copy, which I thought, you know, that's not going to be a problem. It's my results there, my medical records. Shouldn't be a problem with this. And there wasn't. We went to pick them up a couple of days later and got in the car, opened up the A4 paper, and at the top of the paper it said no sperm detected. And that was it. I just, for the first time, I was emotional and I broke down in the car because we knew then that was bad. And it wasn't what the out of hours doctor had told me over the phone. So it presented so many more questions. Why were we told the wrong information? How has he not articulated this correctly? Who even was that? How have they got it so wrong? You know, what does it mean? No sperm detected. So Bronte did the only thing that she felt that she could do was just back me up in that moment. You know, I was upset and she was angry that the practice had got it wrong. So she went in and spoke to the practice manager and just said, we've just picked up this test result and it's completely different to the results we were given over the phone. It's wrong. We need to make a complaint. You know, you can't be doing that. So that was just an awful start to the whole thing, really. You know, we were looking at no sperm detected. And then secondly, we were told the wrong results. And that just ties in really with what's wrong with this whole fertility world within the NHS specifically, you know. And so that's how it all started. And then there was more to follow.
Wow, mate, that's an awful situation. In what's, you know, really just, yeah, I'm lost for words, to be honest. That's, yeah, what a way to find out is, and to be told incorrect information and then find out like that, just opening up that paper and wow, that's quite incredible. Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, thanks, mate.
Look, mate, there was a lot in that couple of minutes that you were talking that is just so wrong, you know, from being told that your sperm is abnormal and not really given a justification on what that means. You know, I remember being told that and the first thing that came to my brain was, what does abnormal mean? And, you know, the anxiety raises straight away. What does that mean? Is there something drastically wrong with me? And then obviously to get the results and actually find out that, you know, at the top of it, it said no sperm detected. You know, a rush of emotions.
I think that's it. You've hit the nail on the head. It was a rush of emotions. You know, we'd been anxious for probably about 2 weeks after we did that initial semen analysis. And I say we because it affects both of you, you know, if you're in a couple. And straight away, obviously Bronte wanted to do whatever she could to support me in that moment, to comfort me, but also to try and figure out, how has this happened? Why are they telling us the wrong results? And this can't happen again, because this is such an important subject. We've got to get it right. So at that point, we actually said, we don't want to be contacted by anyone that's not part of the practice directly. For such sensitive information, can't be outsourcing that kind of routine job. So we actually said to the practice, obviously, we're going to need to repeat the test, because that's pretty standard, just to make sure that it wasn't an anomaly. But in the future, please don't outsource that responsibility. So, and they honored that. And then a couple of months later, I did another analysis. This time I went to the hospital and experienced that for the first time. That was weird. And yeah, there's no other word for it other than weird. But I felt like there was some sort of rationale behind going that time, because I thought, you know, should I do it in a hospital setting so that there's less risk of it being an issue in transit? Will I get better results because of it being in an acute setting? So that's what I did. And that was my sort of thought process behind the second one I'm going to do. I'm going to do it in a hospital. But unfortunately, he got the same results. So the results came in a little bit quicker this time. I think possibly just coincidence, or maybe not, depending on whether they took our feedback on board. And at this point, we actually went to have an appointment with the GP, and she gave us the results in person. Which brings up another issue. We were told no sperm detected for the second time. And at this point, as you can imagine, I think 2 or 3 months had surpassed, and Bronte mostly had started doing a lot of research. And that's when the word azoospermia started living in our lives for the first time. Because, like a lot of men out there, and I know that you've said it yourself, Sean, I didn't even know it existed, you know. And it's crazy to think that that word isn't in your vocabulary for a third of your life until you're a grown adult. So yeah, azoospermia came up, and the doctor that actually gave me the second semen analysis results didn't know what that was. And you can see that she's sat with the intranet, so like the NHS intranet screen up, and reading from it what it is, almost like she's just Googled it for the first time. And we kind of felt at that point, actually, I think we know a bit more about this than you possibly do, because they're a general practice, you know, it's not a specialist environment. And we just didn't get much confidence from her, I think, at that point, that we were being given the right support and the right information. So we knew that something was big time wrong. And we actually mentioned in that meeting with the doctor that we were thinking of exploring the option of going private to try and maybe speed things up a little bit. Because after the second semen analysis was no sperm detected, it said at the bottom of the results, refer to a fertility clinic. And so our question was, how long would that take? And the answer was 63 weeks, which is, you know, a year and a month, is it? Something like that. And at that point, everything's just feeling far too overwhelming to even consider waiting a year and a month to have the next appointment.
Hmm.
So we actually mentioned we might seek some support privately, but please still put us down for that fertility referral, because we want to keep our options open. We don't want to completely lose any of the support that we can get through the NHS, basically.
Wow. Yeah, mate, there's a couple of things you said there that just are such good points and valid points. Is firstly that you're in it together, and I can't think of any other medical situation where it's both of you together. Obviously, like, you know, there are some people who pursue becoming a parent on their own for various reasons, but on the majority of times there's a couple, and yeah, you're in it together, and that is often key for that support. Like in the situations where one person might be in shock, and the other person then picks up the slack a little bit. But then also what you said about the word azoospermia, not knowing it for all of your life, and then suddenly it becomes the word, like the definitive word that just haunts you every day. And yeah, it's a strange situation, really, where suddenly it's all you can think about and talk about. But in terms, you mentioned like going to the GPs and the fact that she was literally like scrolling their like intranet with information when you're there. And obviously you were going in for an appointment about that. It's, you would have hoped and thought that perhaps they could do a tiny, I know they're stretched and it's appointment to appointment, but maybe quickly read some notes and about it beforehand. But you mentioned the word support specifically that you asked, like, what can you do? Like, were you given any guidance or signposting as to what support's out there?
No, is the short answer. We weren't given any kind of guidance, support, anything to take out with us really out of that room. You know, it was it felt like a very short conversation, and you mentioned the word shock. And I think the initial situation is all shock. You know, how is this happening? What's going on? What do these words mean? And when you're in shock and when you're experiencing trauma, you forget things a lot easier than you would normally. And so we came out of that appointment, we went home with no leaflet on what azoospermia is or any fertility information whatsoever. Which at the very least you think should be given to you from a physical point of view. And then because we'd mentioned the private route, because we'd been so desperate at that point to try and get answers quickly, we felt a little bit like we were dismissed quicker because we mentioned that P word. And I think we were both just felt like we've just been in a dream, really. You know, none of that was helpful. We didn't really find anything out in that moment that we didn't already know. And so I think we felt justified that we were considering going private, because that kind of reinforced the fact that if we continued using the NHS's support system, especially for the fertility element of it, that we probably weren't going to get very far, and we probably already lost confidence at that point after two pretty below average interactions with the medical professionals that you know are given that responsibility to work in that particular field, which, as you mentioned, they're stretched. The resource is a big issue in the NHS, but more needs to be done to treat that situation, treat these diagnoses, treat these test results with more sympathy, you know, with more specialist training, I guess. And just, you know, a bit more sort of humanity, really, because you're telling someone a life-changing diagnosis here. And so there needs to be more from an NHS's point of view in terms of that initial reaction to what's going on, I think. So that's when we started seeking help privately, and that's when the story really starts to unfold, I suppose, because we got done a lot more in a shorter time frame, because we went private.
Yeah, I mean, with the increasing issue of fertility around the world, not just in the UK, but you'd think that more GPs would at least have a basic information about male infertility, and to be able to tell you what azoospermia is. It wouldn't have changed the outcome, but at least it would have made you feel more comfortable, you know, and trusted the system a bit more. So it's definitely something that needs addressing. And me and Sean have talked to literally hundreds of thousands of men between us, and you know, your story isn't uncommon, sitting there in front of the GPs, and the GPs don't know what to say and don't know what things are. So something definitely needs to change there. A call to action for the NHS and the medical professionals. I'm sorry you had to experience that, buddy. It's tough. Really.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I went to the doctors recently just because, as Sean will know, when you've got this diagnosis, you need to monitor your testosterone levels, and it can have a massive impact on everything health-wise. And I was just there and looking at the leaflets that they have in the corridor when you're waiting to go in to see the nurse or the doctor. And I just thought, why isn't there a leaflet on fertility here? Just one leaflet, regardless of whether it's male or female or couples, anything, just something needs to be put in there so that you can feel that you belong in that environment and that, you know, your voice is being heard and that you've got some additional support, because there's a lot of good information in doctor surgeries, and I get that. And, you know, I want to make sure that people don't think I'm completely slating the NHS here. But, you know, from a fertility point of view, especially from a male fertility point of view, we didn't have any support. And that's why we started seeking support through private clinic. And so, as I said before, Bronte had started doing a lot of research. And at this point, we had an informed decision to try and seek some support through Jonathan Ramsay's clinic in Buckinghamshire. He's got two main clinics. They've got one in Beaconsfield in Buckinghamshire, and they've got one in London, central London. And I think because where we're based in the Midlands, to get to Buckinghamshire just felt like the natural step to take, really, because then it would mean that we could drive to the appointment and we could drive back in our own time. We didn't have to be on public transport. And so we were starting to think about these things, you know, what we're going to do next. And so in October of 2023, so now I'd sort of been, I'd had two semen analyses done on the NHS. And then in October 2023, I went to meet Jonathan Ramsay for the first time. And I think it's important as well to say that that's not for everyone. You know, not everyone's in a position to actually be able to afford to go to a private setting. We've borrowed money, we've prioritized it over other things, and we've sacrificed things because of the fact that we needed to prioritize going and spending money on this kind of thing. And I think that's what a lot of people in our situation do. You know, they prioritize it and they spend that money. Yes, it's difficult, and yes, it's an awful lot of money as well, but it was needed. You know, we thought we have to get some clarity on this situation. We need more answers. We need more support, and we need someone who has a specialist background to actually try and get to the bottom of what's going on here. So we went to see Jonathan Ramsay. I had an ultrasound on the same day, testicular ultrasound. I had a blood test done for male hormone and Y chromosome deletion. And then obviously I met with Jonathan Ramsay. I had a physical examination, and we were given seemingly all day with him, you know, compared to what you can get at an NHS appointment. So we were immediately welcomed into that environment, and it felt just like we were going to get somewhere. And unfortunately, the semen analysis that we had done down at the clinic was also no sperm detected. And that's when we started talking to Jonathan about non-obstructive azoospermia as well as azoospermia, because at that point we didn't really know which one it was. Could there be a blockage? What was going on? Basically, we were trying to figure out. So I also have a grade 3 varicocele. So we were talking about that. And he recognized that pretty much immediately as soon as we met. And that was also, you know, another topic of conversation. Could that be causing it? Is that an issue? Do we need to have that treated? And obviously, without getting too ahead of ourselves, we decided to just wait for the blood test results, wait for the sort of chromosome deletion results and the hormone results and things like that, and just go from there, really. So we had more waiting ahead of us in terms of that anxiety and that well, all-encompassing, life-changing world that we were in now. And then in December, we did another semen analysis. And I think that was my fourth and final semen analysis. And I started taking tamoxifen and anastrozole. And that was just to try and increase the testosterone, because like a lot of men that have azoospermia, or a lot of men that may have fertility challenges, I had a raised FSH, lower than normal testosterone, all of those really typical fertility issues, you know, grade 3 varicocele. It couldn't be more typical if I tried, you know. I had it all. And then to sort of throw in another complication, seemingly no obstruction, you know, which the ultrasound was showing. And so we were just thinking, well, okay, it must be non-obstructive azoospermia at this point, you know, what else could it be? And then that was when we started talking about how are we going to actually find out, you know, are we going to do a microtesia? Are we going to have a PESER on the NHS? Are we going to have a teaser? And we started having that conversation with Jonathan Ramsey, you know, what do you think we should do? And as you know, Sean, the risks of a microtesia are far higher than what I ended up having, which was FNA mapping, which is far less common. It's not something that you can have done on the NHS. But in March 2024, so this year, I think it was the 21st of March, we went down to the Lister Hospital in London, and I had a fine needle aspiration, which is a testicular mapping procedure. And the idea behind that is 36 individual sites are analysed, so 18 in each testicle. And in simple terms, it's a little bit like a biopsy, I suppose. That's the best way to describe it. And each of those individual samples are analysed to try and figure out if there's any sperm in those results. So about a month later, I think it was April this year, we went down to get the results from Jonathan Ramsey's clinic. And that's when I was told that out of the 36 fixed slides that they analysed, there was no spermatogonia, no spermatocytes, no spermatids or mature spermatozoa, and that both testicles showed Sertoli cells only. And so that was April 2024 that we got the final you know, results of my diagnosis.
Mm. Yeah. Right. It's like I reiterate what I said at the beginning. It's incredible that you're here sharing this, because this is all when you're mentioning these dates, it's all so recent, and it's present. Like one thing that we've both discussed, Kieran and I, at length, is how this made us feel as men, like mentally, emotionally. And that's something that is often even less talked about than male infertility, which is not talked about much. And then when you talk about men exploring thoughts and feelings as well, that's even more niche than that. You've been so brave in opening up on your personal social media. And we'll tell people at the end how they can find you. But what is it that led you to do that, and how have you felt since receiving that diagnosis, more so since going, you know, with Jonathan Ramsey?
Yeah, it's a really difficult one to articulate exactly how I feel and how it made me feel initially. And the social media posts that you mentioned about our fertility story so far, even though it's very recent, were a way of trying to communicate to friends and family what's actually going on with us, because we've just completely disappeared for the last year, you know, year and a bit. We've gone into our shells, both of us, and I used to be quite good at responding to text messages and phoning people back and just being a general, good at communicating, I suppose. And all of that sort of just dropped off when we started telling immediate friends and family there was fertility issues and it looks pretty serious. And we're starting to go through that, you know, treatment and trying to figure out what's going on and get a diagnosis and get some support through that. We felt that like the opening up would be the best way to try and actually explain to people what is going on, because this was all brand new to us and we're learning things in our vocabulary and we're Googling things and finding support online and, as you would have done, joining groups on Facebook. Bronte's told me there's a guy out there who's got his hyperthermia and he's called Sean. How crazy is that? You should follow his page. It's called Knackered Knackers. And I'm like, what? There's people out there that are talking about this and it's on social media. And okay, I need to look at this guy up and look at his page. And then there's the Male Fertility PT. Oh, they've got a podcast together. Okay, what's going on here? How do these two people know each other? And, you know, I was just thinking, well, this is our world now. This is our life. And we're being thrown into it because we've got no other choice. It's not a path that we wanted to be on. We're learning so much. And so we felt very lost and we're still doing in a lot of ways. And we're trying to educate ourselves with our options and what's going on and what has happened and how have we got to this point. And so talking about it has just been a way of trying to let people into exactly what's going on with us, because we've changed over the last 12 months or so. And we just wanted to take a bit of pressure off by putting it out there publicly. It's there, you can read it. We're not expecting you to read it. Everyone's going through their own thing. Everyone's got difficulties in their own lives, but this gives you a little bit of perspective as to why you might not have heard from us or why we don't want to come to that particular event and things like that. So that's why we did it, really.
Yeah, doing that is incredibly brave, buddy. I'm gonna say that when I was definitely going through it, I just kind of shrunk away from the world and didn't want to talk to anyone. But to actually do what you've done, you know, you've with your partner, you've kind of made that conscious decision, and it's the right thing for you. And you know, anyone else that's listening in a similar position, don't be afraid to make the right decision that's for you. And so I got to applaud you on that, mate, and to use your social media in such a way that actually you've used it as a communication tool to loved ones and to friends and family. There's so many different ways of doing it. And yeah, well done, mate. No, because that's one of the biggest things, I think, how relationships can change, dynamics can change. Have you found that relationships with family and friends has changed drastically, or has it just been a conscious decision by you and your partner to kind of step away and take that control? So you're almost facilitating what's going on for your own mental well-being, really, isn't it?
Yeah, they have changed. You know, none of them for the worse. They've just changed. You know, it's inevitable that when you've got things going on like this that you are going to change as a person. And I think that's just natural. We change anyway as we grow older. But sometimes you're forced into change, and that can be down to personal circumstances, sometimes bereavement, sometimes diagnosis. There's a lot of reasons people change, isn't there? And a lot of reasons the dynamics of a relationship changes. And yes, they have changed. We've got a lot of friends, which we're very, very grateful for, and friends that hopefully listen to this podcast and hopefully feel a little bit more involved, because it's something that we're now openly talking about. And they've been lucky enough to naturally conceive And as you both know, it feels at the time that everyone apart from you can naturally conceive. And that's not necessarily true. I know that I'm not ignorant to that now, and I'm very open-minded about what's out there and the struggles that people go through. But as you said, Kieran, you felt like you wanted to just hide away. And I think there are people out there that may also be going through fertility issues and not talking about it. So it's not for me to sit here and say everyone can conceive naturally. That's just how it appears, especially when you see it on social media.
Yeah, especially like you have ages and seasons in life, don't you? There's that phase where everyone seems to be getting married and stuff, and then suddenly you move into the baby phase, and you seem to be surrounded by it, and it's so painful. Like simple things like names that you and Bronte might have discussed before you knew what was going to happen when you were in all of those months trying, and you talk about names that you like, and just seeing them get used and things like that, and it just adds salt to the wound. And seeing people that are your nearest and dearest have babies, and it's that weird feeling of course happiness, but sadness, some jealous and envy, anger, unjustness, is all swirling around, and it's so hard to deal with. It's Kieran said it, you said it, I did the same. I shut myself away for a while and didn't do the things that I would normally do as a day-to-day, and were the things that would bring me joy. I wasn't the same person, and it shows how all-consuming it is, because I was finding that even the things that usually would bring me joy weren't, because it was like a spectre that's just hanging over me all the time. I'd be interested to hear, kind of, is that the same for you and Bronte, or is she dealing with things a little bit differently? And did she, like, obviously you said that she went massively into research phase, which I think is very common from on the female side of things. How about support? Did she reach out straight away? And obviously you said that she found us. So yeah, how's she dealing with it, and how does that compare to you?
Yeah, I think without Bronte doing the typical female thing of research and finding things as quickly as possible and hyper-focusing on that, I wouldn't be where I am now. She found Jonathan Ramsay's clinic. She found you guys, pointing me in the right direction for male fertility support, closed groups on Facebook. So she took a role in this whole thing that is amicable in its own way, because she felt helpless, and she's told me that there's nothing that she could do to make this situation better other than to try and find answers and to try and find support. So that's what she did. And I think now that we've got a diagnosis, things have changed, because during that time, let's call it a 12-month period, that was kind of Bronte's role in all of this, you know, try and get to the end of what's going on, try and find answers. And I think that really helped her to try and focus on something. And so it's really difficult for me to look back and know exactly how she felt at the time, because she was hyper-focusing so much on getting to the bottom of it that I don't think she was allowing herself to sit down and reflect on things to the point that we have now, obviously since April, where the reality is set in and we know exactly what's going on and we've got a diagnosis. So she obviously didn't cope very well with it, and it is the center of her universe as well as it is mine. But I think that was a huge part of our partnership, you know, and all credit to her to get me to where I am now. Because without her, I wouldn't have been able to do it. And I get that there are going to be individuals out there that are facing fertility issues. But you mentioned it before, Sean, that most of the people experiencing it are in couples. And I think that they'll resonate with that their partner takes that support role. And I remember listening to your episodes when you talked about the next steps for you both with IVF and how the tables turned. And I think it's key to highlight as well that I've tried to do that as much as I can for Bronte now that we're at that point where we're looking at other options. And I think that's just a coping mechanism for me because I want to give back to her what she gave to me during that time.
Yeah, it sounds like you and Bronte have an amazing relationship, mate. Like, in terms of open communication, being able to have that dialogue about how you feel and being open about your feelings. I know a lot of guys really struggle to talk to their partners really openly like that, especially during the early stages of, you know, facing infertility. Do you think that's really helped you cope with everything that's going on, being able to talk really openly and honestly? It's kind of a question that I expect to be yes, but, you know, sometimes us guys need to hear it from other people, like talking really helps. And you're in the trenches now. How important has being able to talk to Bronte about how you're feeling been in you coping with everything?
Yeah, huge. Really, really, really important. I think it's one of those situations where you couldn't really be any closer because it's something that is affecting your ability to become parent naturally. And it's also affecting the person that was hoping to become a parent with you. And as men who are listening to this, and as Sean will know, the loss of genetics when you've been diagnosed with non-obstructive azoospermia or Sertoli cell only syndrome doesn't just affect you as a man. Of course, I'm struggling with that at the moment, and I'm not going to pretend that it's not something I think about on a daily basis because we're going through that grief process at the moment. But it's also Bronte, you know, she's devastated that she's not going to be able to bring up a child that was genetically linked to me because that's what she wanted from our partnership. And of course, we're open to the future looking different to what we thought it would look like. And I'm not saying any negative things about alternative options at this point, but it has obviously been something we're both going through, Kieran. And so talking to Bronte has been extremely important for me, and I think vice versa. And I think it's one of the most important things that couples should do if they're going through a similar journey. You know, you need to keep talking about it, even if it's difficult, because there have been times where I don't want to talk and there have been times where Bronte doesn't want to talk, but it's on the tip of your tongue. I need to say something. I've been thinking about something all night, or I've been thinking about something all day and nothing else matters, and I want to say something, and then they might not be in the right headspace to want to talk about it because they're busy or they've got other things going on. But if you can still let that other person sound off, or at least get it off their chest, even if you're not in the mood for talking about it, then that's also fine. You just need to let them do it. And that's what we try to do, you know. There are times where I want to talk about it and Bronte does, and that's perfect because we can go off all night talking about it and until we get extremely tired and think we need to go to bed now. Or we need to do something to switch off. You know, we can't keep talking about this. Not going to achieve anything at 11 o'clock at night. We need to probably watch a TV show to wind down or something. But yeah, it's really, really important.
Yeah, it's good to compartmentalize and to not have it be all consuming if possible. But like I said, it is always there. But, you know, you could always put yourself in more misery and go and watch Aston Villa or something.
Football's been one of my ways to compartmentalize things. It's been my release in terms of the distraction that it can give you, and it's nice because it creates that space between home life and football.
Yeah,
you know, It's good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Having something to you make yours and that you do, just it's so important, because we've mentioned that, you know, we can shut ourselves off a bit, but it is when you can find something that you go to that does bring you joy. And fortunately, Villa are in a good moment. I just want to ask actually about just flipping right back into reality. You mentioned your diagnosis a couple of times, Sertoli cell only syndrome. Could you explain a bit about that for anyone who hasn't heard of it before?
Yeah, so a little bit like azoospermia or non-obstructive azoospermia or sperm morphology, motility, all of those words that were just completely absent from our minds until we all joined this crazy world. Sertoli cell only syndrome is just another one of those that I was like, sorry, what? What's that? And, you know, Jonathan Ramsey said that to me for the first time, but Bronte had researched it, so she was a bit more like expecting that condition to be mentioned. And that was really like the first time when I think I sat back in my chair in the room with Jonathan Ramsey and really started to think, what is that? Exactly what does that mean? And essentially what it is that within our testicles, we obviously, hopefully, depending on your circumstances, develop the ability to produce sperm. But when you have Sertoli cells only, it means that there's an absence of that production of sperm. And it sounds really serious, doesn't it? Sertoli cell only syndrome. And I still can't believe I have it, if I'm being completely honest. I'm in a real out-of-body experience moment, I think, still. But it essentially means that for whatever reason, I can't produce sperm. And I think it's, in my particular situation, it's due to potentially a Y chromosome deletion at some point in my development. These are all just the, you know, obviously an experienced theory around what could have potentially happened in my development and what's actually caused the Sertoli cell only diagnosis. But essentially what it means is that somewhere along the line of my development, that the Y chromosome exists. It's what makes me a man. And when we're all being developed, I think at some point that Y chromosome that was sending messages out to my reproductive organs and everything else, something was blocking those messages that were being sent out by the Y chromosome. And there's potentially an epigenetic failure somewhere that has caused it. And so it's one of those strange situations where we don't have 100% of an answer. You know, I never had surgery as a child that could have caused it. I didn't present any other development issues or had any infections or diseases that could have caused it at an earlier age. I've never had mumps, and I wasn't born with undescended testicles, so therefore never had any issue with any sort of like obvious signs of there being a concern. And so it's really an anomaly, and it's something that I'm still trying to get my head around. And I don't really know if there's any way of getting more answers. But essentially, Sertoli cell only syndrome is causing the non-obstructive azoospermia. So
how does that make you feel, not having something to really hang it on, a reason for that diagnosis?
It's very confusing. It's frustrating. I feel like it's unjust. It's very unlucky. You know, it's the statistics, obviously, for people experiencing fertility challenges are higher than we'd like them to be. But the statistics of having Sertoli cell only syndrome is pretty rare. And so I don't really know how I feel. I think I'm starting to accept it and to try and own it and tell people about it and all of those kinds of things. But in truth, I'm very frustrated and confused and not really sure how I feel about it yet.
Do you think there's a part of you that in some ways grateful that you know that the reason why it kind of like you've got no sperm? Because one of the things I really struggle with, I still do to this day, is I don't know why I have a low sperm count. Like I never got an answer. Do you think, even if not now, do you think in time maybe actually just knowing that that's the reason why, even if you don't know how it came about, do you think you'd prefer that situation than not knowing?
I think so.
Yeah.
And I thought of you actually on the build up to today and how that must make you feel in terms of the uncertainty around why you've got those fertility issues, Kieran. And I guess, yeah, I am grateful for having something to label it as, I guess, because it gives me a little bit more of a, I don't know how to articulate it really. It doesn't give me comfort, but it gives me the ability to actually try to explain what it is. And I think that's important because as we go on, and as I learn to live with it, at least I can call it something, I guess. And I can belong into a category, and albeit that category very niche. And, you know, it's not something you want to be part of, but it's something you are a part of. At least I can belong in that. And hopefully, because it's not necessarily the most uncommon terminology within the fertility world, you know, there are reasons that that syndrome can be caused, and you can read about them, and it can sometimes be environmental. And I think that's what Jonathan Ramsay was alluding to, that, you know, potentially it was an environmental thing when I was younger, a lot younger than I thought he meant, probably when I was, you know, a baby maybe, or even before. So in a way, Kieran, I guess I've never had sperm. You know, I didn't have sperm until I was 20, and then something happened, and then I didn't thereafter. You know, as far as we can tell, I was born without that ability to produce sperm, which is crazy and is something that I can't get over quite just yet, but at least I know that.
Yeah, you said something earlier, you know, that you were 34 when you found out, and you got to 34 when you found out that you couldn't produce sperm. But actually, it might have been there all along. You just got a bit more information about yourself. And I talk about that. The fact of it, for me, nothing really might have changed. I just got a piece of information I didn't have before, and to process that and to learn more about myself in that journey took me some time, you know. And it sounds like, you know, you could be possibly in a similar situation. But yeah. You know, to at least to have something you can pinpoint it to. I could see how, like you said, it doesn't bring you comfort, but it brings you knowledge. And that's a really powerful thing in this uncontrollable situation. You know, that's kind of what I take from that. So what's your next steps? Whereabouts are you in this crazy fertility journey? You know, what's next for next for you?
So what's weird is that you spend quite an intense amount of time with a specialist like Jonathan Ramsay, who you lean on for answers. And then once you get a diagnosis like that, it's like you have to say bye to a friend that you've just made. And you don't want to let go. You know, it's comforting to know that there's someone out there that gets it and that you can talk to about it. And all of a sudden you've got to say, well, thank you for your time and take care. We're now going to go back into the NHS world because realistically, from a financial point of view, we can't keep going down this private route. Unless we might in the future, I don't know yet. But for now, we we made the decision to take the knowledge that we'd gained from the surgery that I'd had and then basically just communicate that back into our practice at home and give them information rather than it being the other way around, you know. And we felt really empowered at this point to actually speak to the specialists at the fertility clinic that we'd, you know, hoped to be referred to within that time. And what's happened since is that we've essentially gone back into that limbo mode of NHS support. In the months where we were seeking support privately, luckily the referral for Bronte's fertility appointment came through, and it did take over a year, but it just landed nicely so that we kind of had some answers and we could be a bit more informed with how we were going to go forwards with it. And so, like a lot of people listening, and you've probably experienced yourselves, we had an appointment with a gynecologist at Birmingham Women's Hospital. And so we explained to her what the situation was, and we kind of dictated that there are certain things we're not going to be able to do. We're not going to be able to use my sperm for IVF, but we are going to stick with it in terms of potentially using IVF for Bronte with donor sperm. And so we wanted to just get more information from them at that point, really, you know, what can you do for us in terms of explaining timeframes, putting us in that pathway, setting us up with the right people and giving us information, really. And we're very much still in the thick of that at the moment. Bronte also has sought some counselling for us through the NHS. And so we're receiving that at the moment. And we're using that as a vehicle to try and get information around the implications of being donor parents. And so we're trying to just do as much as we can to be present and to try and utilize the support and the clinic, really, through the NHS. And so at the moment, we are back in limbo. Unfortunately, Bronte's had some complicated test results. We weren't expecting any more bumps in the road. We thought that at this point, we kind of know that if we want to seek parenthood with some biological link to Bronte, we'd have to use IVF with donor sperm. But we thought that maybe having a routine checkup for Bronte would just be the next natural step. And actually what happened was when we got the results of her ultrasound, that the technician told her that she's got something called a unicorn U8 uterus, which again is another term that we had no idea existed. But what that means is that at some point in her development, the uterus didn't form correctly. And so rather than having a normal shaped uterus, there's only actually half of a uterus there. And then there's what they call a rudimentary horn, which is the tissue that essentially was absorbed when Bronte was being developed. I'll make that sound like she was developed in a laboratory or something, but yeah. Essentially, there's a rudimentary horn, and what we need to find out at the moment is that horn communicating with the working side of the uterus? Because if it is, then there's going to be complications in pregnancy. But if it's not communicating, then chances are that if an embryo was to be formed, it would form in the working side of the uterus and there wouldn't be any more complications. So we're waiting for test results and we're learning a little bit more about that. And I think it's rare, but I think there sometimes are women out there that can go full term of pregnancy and then find out that they have that condition after. But obviously it still does add complications because it means that we can't realistically think about having twins if that was to be the case, because there potentially might not be the room in Bronte's uterus for that, and that could cause further complications and health risks to her. So it's a convoluted answer, Kieran. Like most things in the fertility world, but we are essentially waiting for more results and then very much waiting to be matched up with a donor, which could take apparently 6 months to 12 months. So we're on a slow road at the moment, it feels.
Yeah. It's, you know, the positive you could take from it is you've got a direction that you're going in, even though if that is slow, because the last thing you want to be doing is floating around in this uncertain world of fertility. And I'm sure Sean can talk about the next stage in terms of sperm donors a lot more than I can. That is probably almost a mini journey in the journey, if that makes sense. You know, it's another
quest.
Yeah, quest.
We might have a new word rather than journey. But so I heard someone talk about the fact that a journey is something that you've been on. It's like your journey to work, whereas this is all unknown. And there'll be battles to fight and corners to turn that you don't know are going to go where. So quest, maybe the word for series three. But Sean, you know, what you've described there and throughout this episode is incredible. And you're showing such a remarkable attitude to share now whilst you're living in it. And that is really admirable. You're showing, you and Bronte together, so much strength and resilience to keep picking yourself up and going. And then, you know, like you just explained, then finding out more complications along the route, it's really not easy. And you mentioned like kind of having to say goodbye to Jonathan Ramsey. That doesn't apply with us. You're a friend of the pod, and thank you for coming on. We like to leave, we like to round off with a bit of advice that you would like to give any other men that are in this situation now. So is there something that you would like to share for any other blokes?
Yeah. I don't know whether one piece of advice is suitable for all. So I guess if there's anyone out there that's got a similar quest, maybe try and pick out one of these. I had a little think about what I would say to myself or what people have said to me. And I think, firstly, if you can exercise, if you're able to, for me, it's such a huge thing to be able to distract yourself from the real world and, you know, get all that sort of blood pumping and, yeah, just feel good. So exercise is really important. I think another one is if you have a hobby, then keep doing it. And if you used to have a hobby, maybe try to reconnect with that hobby. And if you don't have a hobby, find one. Because again, it's really important to have something for yourself and to try and focus on and try and do a bit of escapism. Keep connected with your partner. I know we've talked a lot about that, and I appreciate all of the sentiments that you've said regarding our relationship. And I think it's key to stay in touch with yourself, but also your partner, and to try and communicate as much as you can. So finally, try to own your diagnosis and try and accept it. I know that I'm still coming to terms with it, and I'm sure Bronte still is as well. But the main thing you need to do is try to accept it, because I've had a thought about this, and actually, yes, I've changed, and the old me is still there somewhere. I can feel it, and I wouldn't want anyone to lose themselves over this, and I'm certainly trying not to lose myself, because I can feel that there are elements of my old self still here, but that I've just changed, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. I'm trying to make it a good thing. So try to own it, accept it, and remember that you're just different now.
That's good advice, buddy. I'm going to say what Sean said. Thanks for being so open and honest, because there will be men, partners as well, that listen to this that are going through it right now, and they will take a lot from it. So thanks so much for coming on, mate. If people want to follow you on Instagram, how would they do that? Because I know you put stuff up there, and both me and Sean are following you, and you know it's amazing what you're doing on there. So how would they find you?
Yeah, thanks, Kieran. It has been an absolute pleasure, and I feel like I could talk all night to you both about it. And yeah, it's just an amazing opportunity to come on, and I appreciate it. And I hope that anyone who's listening can do the same or to get something out of it. I just have a very public profile now. It's Sean.Farrell. I think there's an underscore at the end of my name because Sean.Farrell wasn't available. So I had to say Sean.Farrell underscore. It was the closest thing I could get to looking like my actual name. So if anyone wants to read the posts, they're pinned to the top of the page, and it's quite open and detailed. You know, it's got information in there about us just trying to articulate what's going on. And I think that's something that we'll continue to do, really. And I'm very conscious that we are open to parenthood in the future, albeit we don't know what that's going to look like yet. And so you never know what's around the corner, and hopefully we'll have an opportunity to reconnect and talk about how things go in the future.
Legend. Mate, incredible. Thank you so much for coming on, sharing your story and those amazing insights as well, and your advice. It will really help a lot of other people. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks both.
Cheers, buddy. And we'll definitely speak to you again soon. Thanks for listening. If this episode has helped you, do us a quick favor and leave us a review. You don't even have to use your real name. Every single review helps another man find this show when he needs it the most. It's honestly the best way you can help the next guy. If you've got a question or something you'd like us to cover on the mailbag, drop us an email at themalefertilitypodcast@gmail.com. We read every message and we love hearing from our listeners. And if you'd like a bit more expert guidance and support from other men on the same journey as you, you're welcome to join our free private community at nexusfertility.com. It's totally confidential and designed just for you by guys that get it. For our latest updates, follow us on social media at The Male Fertility Podcast. And remember, gents, you're not on your own.